This one had an odd-looking door, too. Not shrunken in size, but made of burnished steel and frosted window glass. More suitable to a modern office building than an antiquated, castellated gymnasium. It obviously led to a room beneath the track. There was no light coming through the frosted glass, with the exception of a red smear directly at the top, clearly an exit sign on the other side. Pushing open the door, I stepped onto a wooden landing and peered down into a room that I could barely discern. Since no one was about, I switched on the overheads. They revealed what looked to be an antique locker room. Although rather small, it didn't appear large enough to serve an entire gymnasium. Perhaps it was reserved for coaches, faculty, and alumni. The room itself was narrow but fairly deep, running to the back. It had a high ceiling as well. There were wooden floorboards down below that appeared to have been well trod, as well as a row of old lockers running along the left wall, with a line of standard wooden benches in front of them. Obviously the changing area. Above the lockers and elsewhere around the walls, the space was given over to framed sports-related photographs. To access the higher ones, a catwalk stretched three-quarters of the way around. Something down below caught my eye. It was half hidden beneath the catwalk and had its own special overhead lighting. Curious to see what it was, I elected to take the catwalk around and descend by a set of stairs at the far end. Any person choosing to pass along the line of framed photos received a quick and comprehensive overview of the history and variety of sports at Columbia. I recognized baseball, football, soccer, swimming, diving, fencing, tennis, rowing, track and field, basketball, and wrestling. Most were team photos, but there were individual athletes as well, interspersed and grouped by class year. As I regressed back through the years, the photos transitioned from full color to early days of color to exclusively black and white. When I got to Hugh Blackwell's class, I slowed down and examined the faces more carefully. I was fairly certain I spotted a younger version of the famous alumnus, standing with a group of four others lined up on a diving board. His hair was shorter, but he had leonine features even then. I descended the stairs at the far end and came face to face with the object that had piqued my curiosity. Without a doubt, it was the most arresting object in the room. Seated on an American Craftsman-style wooden throne of honeyed oak was a lion mascot costume that looked as if it had to be at least 100 years old. It looked homemade, or student-made, more likely. Its furry arms were draped on the arms of the chair, with its paws hanging over. Its furry head was massive, about the size of a sponge diver's helmet. Its mouth was open, but not in a roar, and in place of what should have been fangs, it had two teeth that looked more like walrus tusks, or perhaps beaver incisors. In fact, it didn't look much like a lion at all, but more like Chewbacca from the movie Star Wars. In comparison to the lion head helmet, the rest of the costume was more prosaic, amounting to little more than a pair of zip-up pajamas made of velveteen fabric the color of gingerbread. It had sewn-on footies and mittens, as well as a sewn-on tail that draped over one arm of the oaken throne. Particularly arresting were the creature's eyes, which were round, wide open, and light amber in color. They did nothing at all to give the lion's countenance a fierce look. Rather, they gave its face a forever quizzical quality, as if it were continually asking the question, "What gives?" Satisfied by what I was seeing, I was about to take my leave when my attention drifted to the back wall, where I noticed one framed color photograph in particular. It not only caught my eye, it made me do a double take. I was looking at a full-body shot of a Columbia wrestler facing the camera and posed in an aggressive stance as if he were about to charge the cameraman. Something about the eyes jumped out at me. I looked closer, and then, with a seismic jolt, I realized it was a face I had seen before. The caption beneath the photo confirmed it. Joey K., middleweight wrestling champion, 4 years all Ivy. While this astonishing discovery was lighting up my cranium and sending rippling chills down my spine, I was at the same instant dimly aware that several seconds earlier my ears had picked out a distant sound that my interpretive brain was only now getting around to analyzing. I hit the replay button in my oral memory bank and tried to replay it in my mind. Could it have been the far-off sound of a door opening and closing, way back up the gangplank, back at the rowing room? Yes, that fit the bill. Suddenly, I was launched into near panic mode when I realized the overhead lights were still on, that the light switch was way up on the landing, and that the frosted window glass of the door would be spilling that light out into the tunnel, apparent to anyone who was coming down the gangplank. I had to make a quick decision. My best option was to hide in place. But where? Where could I do that? The lockers were too narrow to fit inside. The benches offered no concealment. There was space under the stairs for hiding, but it was sealed off by another wire mesh barrier. Totally inaccessible. I might crouch down behind the lion's throne, but that was not ideal either. Not with the special spotlight from above showcasing it. Finally, I settled on a radical solution, the only one at hand, actually.